Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines, with 4,000 flights to 250 cities in some 40 countries around the world every day. It's easy to book your next flight at AA.com. American Airlines knows why you fly. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. Today, we're looking at Latin America, and we're looking at political trends in Latin America. And when you're going to be traveling down there, or if you're just sharing the same hemisphere, it's good to know what's going on south of the border. I've got with me Thomas Konstam. Thomas is he's got his master's degree from Stanford in Latin American Studies, and Thomas has written or helped contribute to guidebooks throughout Latin America for Lonely Planet. And he joins us today to talk about what's going on in South America. Thomas, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Rick. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Isn't it quite a remarkable trend? Every month it seems like another country in Latin America, the left-wing politicians are winning.
Well, I would say it's an inevitable trend also, considering how many disenfranchised people there have traditionally been since colonial times in Latin American countries, that if there is to be true democracy in these countries, that they're going to eventually elect leaders who have the best interests of the people in mind.
And there has been historically a struggle from the start when you're talking about indigenous people and colonial overlords.
Of course.
And that plays out today. When you think back on the history of Latin America, Simón Bolívar, how would you say that?
Simón Bolívar.
Yeah, he's sort of the people's hero throughout Latin America.
The George Washington, they say, of South America.
So yeah. Bolivia is named after him, but he's certainly not limited to Bolivia, right?
No, he was a Venezuelan, and actually led the efforts to topple the Spanish colonial power, and they founded a country called Gran Colombia, meaning Great Colombia, which comprised a number of countries, Venezuela, Peru, Bolivia, Colombia, modern-day Panama also, which later became part of Colombia when they split and was then
So this is one big country?
One big country, and he didn't govern for very long. I think his quote after that was something like, he who tries to govern attempts to plow the seas, or something along those lines. It was he led the efforts against the Spanish, but then afterward he died shortly thereafter. So
let's take a quick overview of Central American politics, because these struggles have been going on now for a couple hundred years, and in the last decade there's been big changes and a shift to the left, and it's probably part of a pendulum, and it probably goes back and forth, and we see this constantly in all corners of the planet. But I'm just going to click through the different countries and give me your take on what's going on with political movements. Immediately south of our border, Mexico. They just had a very closely contested election.
Well, in Mexico, you had, when Vicente Fox came to power, and I believe it was 2000, there was a lot of excitement that he was the first non-pre-candidate, PRI being the Institutional Revolutionary Party, to come to power in many, many years. Very high expectations. He ran head-on into the reality, though, that changing the head of a country doesn't necessarily mean that you can change the whole country, because you have everyone down from port commissioners to mayors to regional congress people who were still faithful to the PRI.
So PRI or PRI had dominated Mexico through.
Yeah, it was a single party country.
For 70 years.
Exactly.
So Fox comes in, refresh new promises, and he goes head on with reality.
And I think that he tried his best, but he found his hands tied at every turn. And there was hope with Obrador, Manuel Obrador, the mayor of Mexico City and leftist candidate, who early on was looking like he was going to take this election, that he would be able to push it further, and really is a populist, but clearly has the working class and impoverished people's best interests in mind. He had some connection with Chavez too, and it's debatable now whether that helped him or not, as Chavez has started to see a little bit of a backlash in Latin America. And Obrador ended up losing the election ever so slightly. And in the end, now he's not going to take power.
Now, when we're thinking about Mexico, we hear a lot in the news about Oaxaca and Chiapas, and these are basically regions that are greater percent of the people are Indian or indigenous people.
Yes, much higher, and have been traditionally disenfranchised from the seat of power, which is in Mexico City, other big cities near the American border that are industrialized, and those areas of the country have been left to develop on their own. Chiapas, if you remember, was the home to the Zapatista revolution, I guess you could say.
And this is basically the poorest place in Mexico, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And Oaxaca also?
Oaxaca has a lot of more money coming in from tourism, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the money is making its way to
the indigenous people. So the people who are demonstrating on the street aren't seeing much of that tourism money.
Exactly.
But the recent disturbances in Oaxaca must have really wreaked havoc on the tourist industry there.
Of course. And
bringing more unemployment.
But perhaps in the long run, but people feel fed up and felt that they really had a candidate who represented them in Obrador, and feel that once again it's the same story that's been going on century after century, basically, that they have no say when it comes down to it, and people feel like now with democracy that their voice should be heard.
So for now, Mexico remains, would you say, centrist with an angry left wing?
Exactly.
All right, let's go further south. Well, Hugo Chavez, that's the mm-hmm. that's the big news in mm-hmm. Venezuela. Mm-hmm. What's with this guy?
Well, Chavez is like Castro. The more you learn about Chavez, the more difficult and confusing it becomes to take a clear stance on whether he's the savior of Latin America, the champion of the third world, or if he's a blowhard populist who's willing to say whatever needs to be said to get support from the masses and then doesn't necessarily follow through on it. The one thing that's always important to remember about Venezuela is that it's a petrol state. So therefore, it doesn't compare evenly with other Latin American countries. They've done very little to develop different aspects of their economy because as long as oil prices are high, Chavez doesn't really have much to worry about beyond that.
So he doesn't have to deal with reality. He can give he can give oil to New York City if he wants to, just to fund the American administration.
Right? And he has, yes.
I'm speaking with Thomas Konstam, a writer for Lonely Planet Publications, and he contributes to guidebooks for just about every country south of the border. And he's also got his master's degree from Stanford in Latin American Studies. We're talking about the political trends in Latin America, and lately that means moving to the left. Well, Hugo Chavez is sort of a boisterous champion of the people, and he's sort of had a little backlash because he's just shooting himself in his foot. Is that the assessment?
Well, there are a few things that have happened. Whenever you use as much hyperbole as Chavez has, you run the risk of alienating people that think you've maybe gone a little too far. And he's tapped into a lot of anti-American sentiment around the world. If you all remember his speech at the United Nations recently, it's relatively easy to rally people against the American presidential administration right now.
Well, and also just globalism. Isn't he a voice against globalism?
He is. One of his main stands is against free trade area of the Americas. He has, at the same time, considering how much money their country is generating off of oil, the main bridge between Macatia Airport, which is the main airport for Caracas, and the city collapsed into the ravine. Crime is out of control.
So there's corruption.
There's a lot of corruption, and the economy, the middle class, and much of the upper class are starting to flee the country. So while Chavez is talking a good game, the situation in the country seems to be worsening. Indicators on poverty are going up. So there seems to be there is some difference between the rhetoric and the reality.
So at least Chavez is a loud voice for popular concerns against globalization.
Yes, and he's truly has made an effort to be a champion of the people. I know that when I was in the eastern part of the country, which is heavily indigenous in Canaima National Park, very few Venezuelan presidents have ever even set foot while they were in office in that part of the country. He comes out there, gets in his bathing suit, swims in the river, shakes hands with people, goes out and about without bodyguards. He's out there.
So he's a people's man.
He is the people's man.
Well, let's take it to a place where that really needs a people's person, and that would be the most Indian or the most indigenous country, I think, in all of Latin America. Is that fair to say, Bolivia?
Bolivia and Guatemala, perhaps, would rival that. But Bolivia is the poorest country also in South
America. And it's probably no coincidence that if they are the most indigenous with the least colonials or whatever the word would be, they would be poor countries with real struggles from people who own the land and own the industry and then the masses of the people. And quite impressively, we've got Evo Morales that's taken the lead of Bolivia. What do you see there?
Well, I see that it's a very positive step, in my opinion, as Bolivia is a country that has been pillaged for its natural resources since its founding. There's very little developed industry in the country. It's traditionally silver has left the country, natural gas has left the country, minerals, what have you, and people provide the basic labor there and see very little of the greater profit. So you have a small group of people who have made a lot of money and people in other countries who have made a lot of money. And Morales was a former coca farmer himself.
So here you go. This is perfect. You got one of the most wealthiest countries for natural resources. And what's going on? A few people make the money there and a lot of people make money outside of the country. Isn't that sort of the dynamic that feeds all of the struggles in Latin America? Is how can we keep the money and the wealth in the country? And the United States comes down on the side of the right-wing governments generally. Is that fair to say?
Of course. The United States basically wants stability and markets to do business in the region. So they want the candidate that is best going to represent business interests.
And if I look at recent elections in Central America, I can see an American interest. And, you know, we're all champions of democracy here. We're outspoken about that. I believe El Salvador was having an election a couple of years ago. The left-winger was about to win. And Jeb Bush actually went to El Salvador and filmed TV ads explaining that if the left-winger wins this election, the United States will have to cut off remittances. A quarter of El Salvador's income comes down from the United States as the sons of El Salvador in the United States work and sending money home to mom. Mom sees this TV ad and she realizes, oh, if I vote for the left-winger, that's my last check from my boy in the United States. Consequently, the right-winger pulled it out in El Salvador thanks to that ad campaign. And just recently, Daniel Ortega, the nemesis of the United States again, is running as a leftist in Nicaragua. And once again, TV ads helped by the United States explaining if Ortega wins, that's the end of remittances in Nicaragua. So the United States—
Ortega did win.
He did win. So the populace must be seeing through that. I was just down in El Salvador talking to one of the Jesuits, the Jesuit professors of the University of Central America there in San Salvador. Remember the six Jesuits who were murdered? Was that back in the 80s, I think? And they just tried to decapitate the intellectual head of the, you know, people's movement. One guy was out of the country. He survived. He's still the leading intellectual in El Salvador today. I stood with him as I was down there remembering the 25th anniversary of the assassination of Archbishop Romero. And we asked him about democracy. And he said, these days when he hears the word democracy, I remember this pretty vividly, he said, my bowels move. It just turns him off. Democracy is a disgusting concept to him as a champion of the people in Central America. This is a very, very poignant time in Central America as you've got indigenous people rising up and you've got people who own the industry threatened by this and you have international interests mixing into it. It's kind of a fascinating time as a student, I would think, for you who's got a master's degree in Latin studies to be observing.
No, most definitely. Where democracy, when it really works and people really have a voice, this is the direction that many things will turn in Latin America. Of course, democracy can always be influenced by the powers that be, by money from inside of the country, from the elite, from outside of the country, mainly the United States.
I'm talking with Thomas Konstam, and Thomas has his master's degree from Stanford in Latin American Studies, and he works for Lonely Planet Travel Publications and contributes to guidebooks throughout Latin America. Thomas, I've always thought that the Christian faith of people in Latin America was a powerful force, and it comes down in sort of two ways. There's liberation theology, and there is the other side of the coin, which would be, I'd call it escape theology. Escape theology being put up with your lot in life here, and everything will be better after you die when you go to heaven. Liberation theology is the more radical left-wing Christianity that would threaten, you know, big business interests and the right wing and so on. And that would be what was powering a lot of the people's movements in Central America back in the 70s and 80s, I think. Is the liberation theology movement still strong, and do you see today that people's Christian faith powers their political kind of movements?
To a degree. I think what we see happening now overall is more of a secular political movement, not necessarily fed to people through church as much as through television at this point. You see, Chavez has a direct mouthpiece to the people through, he has a television show, Alo Presidente. You see radio addresses, whereas traditionally, even going back a decade or two, it was through the church that could really address the great majority of people. Liberation theology does still play a role, and there are many people involved in the Catholic Church who are pushing for people to look at the bigger picture and to look at where they fit in the economy, in the society. There's a growing influence from evangelical churches, Mormonism, and other Christian faiths in Latin America right now. And you do have some tension actually between those churches. I would say overall in this generalization, but the evangelical churches are more conservative, right, and fall more on the side of being pro-capitalist and more following the status quo.
Is the liberation theology stronger in Central America, or does it go throughout Latin America?
I would say Central America and Andean South America, more the indigenous areas of, you know, Peru.
Is it a fair statement to think that the indigenous people have more of a socialistic tradition, and whereas in the United States we celebrate this rugged individualism, my experience in wandering through the barrios in Latin America is people are a little more socialistic, and they will give up certain things in order for the community to work together.
I think that it's a fair point taken on the history of different cultures that indigenous, and of course this is a generalization because Aztecs, Incas, people from the Amazon weren't the same people, but smaller societies that functioned in a more cohesive family structure, more of a sociocentric culture, whereas the Europeans as they came over were more business oriented, more interested in nuclear family and their own individual welfare.
The hospitality in Latin America is just incredible.
Of course.
I mean, poor people just roll out the carpet for you. If you've got one chicken, it's on your plate.
One of the most striking things about Latin America and one of the things that really made me fall in love with the region was, you know, the first time I went to Brazil, people were inviting me to come to their house, stay in their bed. I was in northeastern Brazil in 1996.
Mi casa, su casa, isn't it the
exactly.
Spanish word? My house is your house. And they really mean it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's almost embarrassing
to
be so wealthy and to go through these very, very simple communities. Mm-hmm. And mi casa, su casa.
And as an American, you have this level of paranoia almost when someone offers, you know, what's your ulterior motive? But I never had any negative experiences in that way. So very fantastic.
It's an endearing thing about traveling throughout Latin America.
Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines. With their new Advantage Award booking tool, it's easier than ever to book to over 800 Advantage Award destinations online at aa.com. American Airlines knows why you fly.